And now, drinking among women is a growing health problem in the pandemic. More troubling to addiction researchers is the trend coincides with the rise in mental health issues among young women, and the long-term effects of the pandemic could worsen both. Are you or a loved one drinking a lot more in these times? Do you know a woman struggling with alcohol addiction? Are they getting help? It's 800-642-1234. Clinical psychologist Catherine McHugh directs the Stress, Anxiety, and Substance Use Laboratory at McLean Hospital in Massachusetts. She's an associate professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School. Kate McHugh, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start with giving us a snapshot of how drinking has changed for women over the past few decades. What have you seen?
So historically, drinking was more common in men, and this goes back decades and decades. At times, you know, a ratio of 2 to 1, even 3 to 1. And over the last, frankly, several decades, women have caught up and they've closed that gap to the point that men and women drink at roughly equal rates, and women almost have alcohol problems at the same rate as men do at this point.
What about now in the pandemic? What are researchers learning about women and alcohol?
There's been an interesting trend in the past 2 decades in particular. We've actually seen levels of drinking overall go down, particularly in youth. That has hit an inflection point in 2020, where we're now starting to see drinking levels go up. And those drinking levels appear to be going up more rapidly in women than in men.
So what accounts for the closing gap? Why are women turning to alcohol?
So this is not exclusive to the United States. We see this internationally. And one interesting trend is the place where women are catching up more are the places in the world with better gender equity, which of course is a good thing. But what we anticipate this is likely attributable to is increasing access. And once access to alcohol and even other substances is more equivalent, we see levels of drinking and levels of problem drinking start to become more equivalent between women and men.
What about the effects of stress? And I'm thinking about the job loss, the effects of being in high stress COVID units or another essential worker, the balancing act of family obligations. What factor does stress have in all of this?
So we know that stress is a risk factor for drinking for both men and women. However, it actually appears to be a bigger risk factor for women than for men. So for example, stress is more likely to be the reason for drinking in women than in men. We also know things like depression are more likely to precede an alcohol problem in women than in men. So in many ways, COVID has been a sort of a perfect storm when you think about, you mentioned family obligations. So the stress levels have been particularly high in women caretaking for young children who are oftentimes managing at-home schooling as well as their own work and sort of trying to meet those family obligations as well. Isolation, as you mentioned, many women are in the healthcare field where stress levels have been particularly high over the course of COVID. So in many ways, the combination of isolation, stress, family stress in particular has maybe a particular driving factor for why we're seeing these increases in women.
I'm wondering if you can explain substance use and that instant relief your patients feel, but are also battling, you know, mental health issues. What does that look like?
Right. And this is another place where we've seen just a tremendous effect of COVID. So COVID hits in two directions. So as you mentioned, alcohol provides relief of stress. And one of the tricky things is it provides immediate relief for very little effort. So if you imagine you're someone who has very little time and potentially limited resources to be able to cope with stress, alcohol can give that very quick relief. In the context of COVID, many people lost their other coping strategies. They couldn't go to a gym or go to dinner with friends or sort of have a break when kids go off to school. So that quick fix, that quick relief is very powerful. And in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing, until it becomes relied on too much, when it's the only strategy or when it's used in excess just to try to get relief from that stress, that's when we start to get into problem territory.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering if you can help us understand further, what is that problem territory? I mean, is it, you know, drinking too early in the day or too many drinks? But when does it become problematic?
So there are two things you can look at. One is the level of alcohol use. So we know that at certain levels of alcohol use, there are negative health consequences. And those can range from everything from cardiac and liver disease to risk for cancer, including risk for breast cancer in women. That level for women is typically consuming more than 3 drinks in a day or more than 7 drinks in a week. That's usually the cutoff for what we would call heavy drinking. So that's sort of one category. The other category is when drinking starts to become out of control, which effectively means that your drinking is now causing negative consequences, but you continue to drink anyways. So that could be anything from it causing psychiatric or health problems like depression to interfering with people's ability to engage in their roles. You'd mentioned sort of needing a drink in the morning, which may be a sign of physical dependence on alcohol. But effectively, once negative consequences start to creep in, that's when we're starting to look at an alcohol problem.
How are women's health outcomes, how are they different from men's when it comes to alcohol use disorder?
So when it comes to alcohol use overall, and let me start there, is that women and men metabolize alcohol differently. Mm. So all other factors being equal, if a female and a male consume the same amount of alcohol, the female's blood alcohol level will be higher. And this is one of the reasons why we think that the health consequences of alcohol are actually greater in women than they are in men. So that's sort of one issue. In terms of alcohol use disorder, once we get into problem drinking, typically women will have greater functional impairment than men. And basically that means more impairment in their family functioning, in their employment, in their health, in their psychiatric functioning. Alcohol use disorder appears to affect women to a greater extent than men in terms of their ability to function.
We have a psychologist, Kate McHugh of Harvard Medical School, explaining the rise in women consuming alcohol and binge drinking and the effects it has on health. Is someone in your life struggling with alcohol? Have you quit drinking? What's your experience been like as a sober woman? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A study published earlier this year in the Journal of Gynecology and Women's Health, it found women with higher levels of pandemic-related anxiety tended to drink more, including earlier in the day, more frequently, and in greater amounts. Women, what is your relationship with alcohol, especially in these pandemic times? Are you in a 12-step program? How are you battling alcohol abuse? Share your experience, 800-642-1234. We have Harvard Medical School psychologist Kate McHugh, who leads the Stress, Anxiety, and Substance Use Lab at McLean Hospital. Let's go to Sarah now in Green Bay. Hi, Sarah. What's been your experience?
Hi. I am actually a person who we would call a recovering alcoholic, or somebody that did abuse alcohol a lot earlier in my life. And I was able to kick it and get a healthy relationship with alcohol since then. However, I found that during the pandemic, I definitely went back to some of my old routines and my old ways, because I found that I was very bored. And I know you spoke about that earlier, but I didn't have the resources and outlets that I used to use as healthy coping mechanisms. And I did see a definite increase in my drinking, and for reasons of really just having nothing else to do and being bored, and that being a definite trigger for me.
I wonder, Sarah, what were those healthy coping mechanisms that went away for you in the pandemic?
So in the past, exercise was definitely one of them. Mm-hmm. Heading to the gym, spending time with my friends, doing activities like shopping. Retail therapy was definitely something that, for me, just walking around thrift stores would take that trigger point away from me of that boredom or that, you know, there's nothing else to do and I'm stressed out kind of thing. And, you know, it just, the things became fewer and fewer that I was able to do to cope with it. And it definitely was a struggle.
Kate McHugh, your insights here on lapsing in the pandemic.
Well, first, thanks so much, Sarah, for sharing your experience with that. Certainly, boredom is another major factor here. And I think your experience is really demonstrating that, that the things that you used to fill your time with that brought you reward and connection and joy were really limited in the pandemic. And I think if we think about the different potential triggers for alcohol, boredom is one, loneliness is one, stress is one. You know, these were all factors that were coming into play for many people. Again, that combination of high stress and removing potential rewards was tremendously difficult. And, you know, as we had talked about earlier, alcohol provides that quick fix. And in the moment when you're really bored or stressed, it can be tremendously difficult to make an alternative choice.
I wonder, you mentioned loneliness, and that has been an epidemic that's been a huge problem. What do you see there with the connections between loneliness and substance abuse?
So loneliness, we know from research, is, for lack of a better word, one of the most toxic things to our health and wellness. It's toxic to our long-term health. It's toxic to our mental health, and certainly is a major trigger for alcohol. Maintaining connectedness is one of the best things we can do, not only for our mental health, but also for our health. Again, in that isolation and that lack of reward, lack of meaning that I think can really settle in when you're isolated is a tremendous risk factor.
Sarah, thanks. Let's go to Lissa now from Green Bay. Hi, Lissa. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just had a quick question. Your guest had earlier talked about the impairment problems that women experience in their family and work seems to be more impacted by substance use disorder. I'm wondering how much social norms and expectations of women's behavior in those settings also plays a role with that.
And when you say social norms and expectations, can you go a little bit deeper there? What do you mean?
Well, how do I want to explain this? The expectation of how women interact in their families, how they interact at their jobs, what types of jobs they have, versus men and the expectations of them in the workplace or in their home lives.
Mm.
How much does that play a role in those impairment problems being more prominent?
Our social norms, gender norms. Kate McHugh.
So great question. This gender norms play a tremendous effect. So we know that women are more likely to have caretaking responsibilities, for example, both childcare and elder care. So you imagine if you have a group that has more of those responsibilities, there's more impairment to be had. So on the social and functional impairment, I anticipate that's likely a significant contributor. On the medical and psychiatric impairment, that may be more of, if we sort of separate sex being sort of the biological differences versus gender being more cultural, I think we probably see significant differences in both the body and the brain, as well as in the impact of those cultural norms.
And what are the implications of those cultural norms? How does that play out?
Well, it plays out in many ways. It plays out in terms of the, again, the level of impairment that may play out for someone with an alcohol use disorder. It also has implications for treatment.
Uh-huh.
So, it can certainly be a barrier to treatment. If you imagine someone who has multiple caretaking responsibilities, perhaps they're also working, being able to get to a AA meeting or get to a therapy session can be exceptionally difficult. That requires time. It requires oftentimes childcare for people to be able to access those services. So really it affects the whole spectrum from risk to how these disorders play out to access to treatment.
We're talking with Kate McHugh, who directs the Stress, Anxiety, and Substance Use Lab at McLean Hospital in Massachusetts. She's an associate professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School, looking at the trend lines as women seek alcohol, and especially in these times. You can join in with your situation, 800-642-1234. You know, we live in such a quick fix society, and we want that instant relief. What are the difficulties for you in treating substance abuse and treating alcohol use disorder when the effects are not only physical, but emotional and psychological? And you may not be able to give that quick fix.
Right. It's one of the hardest things we contend with in treatment. And when people are trying to make this change is, you know, if we think of a healthy alternative, I know the exercise has come up a couple of times. Exercise is wonderful and will get you in some ways both a quick fix and a long-term fix. But the difference between picking up a drink and putting on your sneakers and going for a walk or going to the gym is very different, you know, and it requires more time, it requires more effort. And those changes can be very difficult to make. And that's where treatment really does come into play. The good news in all of this is we have very effective treatments, and they're effective medication treatments, they're effective behavioral treatments. You know, the one message that I think is really important for women to get is you don't have to do this alone. That's the hard way.
What do you see in AA and 12-step programs? Are they still your go-to for treatment, or are you pairing them with other things?
So it depends on the individual. For some people, a mutual help or self-help like AA, Smart Recovery is another model that's very popular. For some people, that mutual help is sufficient. And the good news there is that it's very easy to access. And particularly lately, there's even more in terms of web-based access to those types of services. Typically, once people get a little farther down the severity spectrum, so once someone really does have a sort of diagnosable alcohol use disorder, something like mutual help is typically more of an adjunct, which can certainly help improve outcomes. But typically, in those situations, working with a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a primary care physician, working with a health professional is usually going to be the way to go.
And quickly, as we wrap up here, what is still unknown? What research still needs to be done regarding women and drinking?
There are massive gaps in understanding, in part because women have been underrepresented in research in health in general and addiction in particular, really across the spectrum from very basic health research through health services research. So there are a number of gaps in terms of understanding what are the differences between men and women in terms of mechanisms for why they may drink, treatment effectiveness. We have probably more gaps than we have answers at this point.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ben. My pleasure.
Clinical psychologist Kate McHugh is an associate professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School. If you or someone you know needs help, call the Wisconsin Addiction Recovery Helpline. That's 211, operates 24/7 for finding substance use and recovery services. That's 211. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.